Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Hogan. I was not certainly alive in 1933 and therefore was not able to go to the Century of Progress exhibition to see such things as fan dancer Sally Rand. But a new book by Don Raffel called The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney, How a Mysterious European Showman Saved Thousands of American Babies, absolutely took me back to 1934 in Chicago. Don Raffel, welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thank you. It's a
Hello,
pleasure.
Hello, Don.
Hi. Hello?
Hi, Don. Is it you?
Yes, hello.
Hi. It's Rick Hogan. Did you hear what I was saying about your book?
Yes, I did.
Oh, thank God. Thank God, because I was going to say, it's a remarkable bit of historical research, but it's also a remarkable bit of writing. It starts with a real bang in Chicago in 1934. How did you discover this strange, compelling guy, Dr. Cooney?
I was doing a little research on the Century of Progress World's Fair, which took place in Chicago in 1933-34.
Yeah.
It's not the famous World's Fair that everybody thinks about with the Ferris wheel and the devil and the White City.
No, that's Eric.
That's
Eric Larson's fair. You have now claimed this for yourself, dear. Believe me. Believe me. Yeah, it really is. It really is ignored. I know, you know, as a Chicago historian and newspaper reporter, a little bit about it because my father would tell me stories being there. And indeed, I had heard not of Dr. Cooney, but certainly of Sally Rand and Mike Todd, who had some things to do at the fair. But this portion of the fair, what were you researching specifically when you came upon this compelling character, Dr. Cooney?
I was looking at pictures of this fair. I was curious about it. My parents grew up in Chicago. I spent a lot of my childhood in Chicago, and so I was surprised I'd never heard of it before, and so I just, out of curiosity, was looking at pictures, and there on the Midway was this incubator exhibition next door to the fan dancer Sally Rand.
Yeah.
Not in the Hall of Science, right out on the Midway. What on earth was this? Why would anybody allow their child to be exhibited this way? And when I realized he was also on Coney Island for 40 years, I thought, all right, I have to get to the bottom of this. Who was this guy and why was this going on for as long as it did?
It is. And I one of the reasons you have pulled this off is you are a terrific writer. And the narrative drive of this book is hypnotic. But your research is tremendous too. I mean, the notes at the back are enough to make certainly any newspaper reporter like I very, very, very impressed. Were you kind of stunned when you began to research this guy that there had not been more written about him? I know that the Chicago Tribune went kind of, you know, the Chicago Tribune, to my mind, just from reading your book, was kind of this guy's press agent, kind of, wasn't it?
They loved him.
Yeah,
they
I know.
They loved him. The local newspapers in New York loved him, too. But here's the thing. He was excellent at inventing his own story.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're a feature writer back then, you're not going to fact-check this stuff. So he claimed he had these stellar European credentials and that he was the intern to a very famous French doctor. None of that was true.
Yeah.
And, you know, how are you going to fact check it? There's no internet. There's no long-distance phone calls. You're not going to.
Well, and it's also,
people took him at his word.
Well, and it's also the age of miracles. You know what I mean? And what reporter in their right mind would challenge this, you know, one of his great phrases, was all the world loves a baby. And who's going to start arguing with this lovely kind of philosophy? The story's just too good to fact check. But not many years later, and when you started to fact check this, you must have been stunned.
It was a 4-year rabbit hole of research. What was interesting, though, is that although the medical credentials have to have been fabricated because he was in this country already when he said he was in Europe earning a medical degree,
right.
There's just no record of a medical degree anywhere or a medical license, the treatment was real.
Yeah.
And the treatment was better than anything you could get in a hospital. And again, this went on for decades. He was so good at putting together his story that it took quite a while to really get to the bottom of it and find that, you know, he was born Michael Cohn. He came here when he was 18 years old, steerage class, and he got into this as a showman.
Well, just before we take a break, and I'm going to keep you on if that's okay with you all the way until 11, because you have a couple of very exciting events coming up, too. But this book is I'm laughing out of joy, Don Raffel, because it just is some unbelievable story. This man, in his way, whether he's charlatan or I assume many people, and even I, Dawn, I'm sorry if this flies in the face of it, I think this guy's some kind of like the strangest hero that I can remember encountering between covers of a book.
Oh, I think he's a hero also.
Good.
I mean, you know, he's a flawed hero is still a hero. To me, that's the most interesting kind.
Yeah. Well, we will explain. Don Raffel and I will explain exactly why he is a flawed hero. Don's grandparents are from Hyde Park. She spent a lot of time here. You're born in Milwaukee. You're a Medill grad, and you have written, were that it would be able to sell like Eric's Devil in the White City sells.
Right.
Because, or half of that. Don, stay with us through a couple commercials and then the news, and we will talk all the way until 11 o'clock, okay?
Great, thank you.
Okay, great. It's a great book. Well, so we'll take a break, and then we'll get some news, and then we'll be back with Don Raffel in this wild story. The book is The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney, C-O-U-N-E-Y, and it is a strange case. We'll be right back. Welcome back to After Hours with me, Rick Cogan. I am lucky enough to have the next half hour to spend in the company of Don Raffel, who has written a number of books. Now I will have to go back and read those because I am so hooked with the way she tells the story of The Strange Case of Dr. Cooney, how a mysterious European showman saved thousands of American babies. Dawn, at the time this fellow came on the scene, American babies in America that were born prematurely were basically doomed to die. Is that correct?
For the most part, yes. There were some scattershot efforts in hospitals to try to save them, but really the situation was not good.
So how did this man, he brought incubators from that were in use in France. Was the scene of trying to save premature babies more advanced in other places than it was in the United States?
Well, the incubator, as we know it, was developed in France in the late 1800s. And so the incubator Cooney was using was designed by a French engineer. This engineer was also not a doctor, so to show off his new invention, he created what he called charity shows, where people could pay a little money and see these machines in use. And to tell everybody how great the machines were, he was bragging that it's practically automatic. It's so good, you just put the baby in, and it basically takes care of itself.
Unbelievable.
He took the machines to the Berlin Industrial Exhibition in 1896, and there was worldwide interest immediately in these machines. The Germans were so excited, they referred to it as the child hatchery, and they had drinking hall songs about it.
Yeah.
So a minute later, showmen all over were interested in this because the audiences were huge. And here this guy is saying it's practically automatic.
Yeah.
So Bailey of Barnum & Bailey had a show in London. The London Royal Aquarium had a show. There were shows in Italy. Most of the showmen got out of it very quickly because this was not a toaster oven. It's a tremendous amount of work to keep a premature baby alive. Somehow or other, Martin Cooney got into this with his backer, Sam Schenken, another immigrant. They first went to London and showed it at the Queen Victoria Jubilee. Then they returned to the United States and to the Omaha World's Fair in 1898.
And then Buffalo.
Returned.
And then Buffalo,
Buffalo
the next year.
Next.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. And suddenly he was the eminent Dr. Martin Arthur Cooney, who has a wide experience in Europe.
Because he had, because he had been in Europe. The astonishing thing to me is that it doesn't surprise me at all that in the United States that it did wind up as a kind of sideshow element, because the medical community was not about to embrace this, was it?
They tried a little bit at the beginning. There was some interest in it. The problem is that a machine is only as good as the people you have to use it.
Yeah.
So if you don't really have skilled nurses, and if you don't have, a lot of those hospitals were kind of dirty at the time,
mm-hmm.
And if you don't know how to feed preemies, then you can have these machines, but you're not going to get a good result. And so they just figured, well, it's not really working. You know, they tried different other ways, but there wasn't a huge emphasis on saving these tiny babies who were called weaklings in the medical literature either.
Well, and that's where the element, one of the threads in your amazing, I'm throwing around every adjective I have for you, Dawn Reff.
Thank you.
In your amazing book is the whole matter of eugenics and the whole ugly matter of eugenics. That is a serious thread in your book, is it not?
Yes, it is. I was surprised to run across that, but I started seeing in the 1900s, there were these better baby contests all over the country that were eugenic competitions, and there was a whole emphasis on breeding better babies and not giving birth to inferior babies.
Yeah.
So we know, you know, some awful things that happen.
With, oh, yes.
You know, sterilization of African-American people,
sure.
Of Mexican people,
yep.
Of people who had disabilities. And there were also, especially in Chicago, there was a doctor targeting children with severe disabilities and advocating letting them die, even if they could be saved, called the press to watch them die, wrote articles about it, and got a lot of support.
Oh, no question. Yeah. No question.
Yeah. So preemies were never directly targeted, but this was an environment where you'd think, well, some of them will have disabilities, and will they ever lead productive lives, and why should we spend our resources here?
Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the sad threads in your remarkable book. Cooney was something, I have to believe, and I'm making a lot, as much as you tell me in the book, I still wind up making these wild assumptions about this guy because he's so compelling and he remains, you know, I love that you call him a mysterious European. He remains for me kind of enigmatic. Was he some kind of medical idiot savant? In order to do this and to save something in the neighborhood, as if you pin it, between 6,500 and 7,000 babies, did he care?
I think he cared deeply.
Yeah.
I don't know what his motivation was initially when he got into it, but I think he quickly understood he had the means to save these children and no one else was doing it.
Mm.
Now, I don't, you know, he was pretty much following the methodology of the great French doctor whose intern he said he was, although I doubt
right.
these two men ever met. But I would also say the secret sauce here was the nurses who did a lot of the heavy lifting. His wife was an RN. She trained at Maurice Porter Hospital in Chicago.
Yeah, I know. There's a very strong Chicago connection here in that he also was showing preemies for, you know, anywhere from a dime to a quarter to anyone who wanted to see them at Riverview, the great amusement park, and the bygone, perhaps even greater amusement park, White City. What was it about Chicago, do you think? And then we'll get to the part about Michael Reese and the first real incubators. Why was Chicago such a focal point of his activities?
Well, he started to have these, his home base was Coney Island.
Right, oh sure.
But he started to have these franchises elsewhere. He was also had a show at Atlantic City that ran for a long time. He was in Minneapolis. He was briefly in Denver. I think Chicago partly appealed to him because his wife had trained there, and she must have known people there.
Right.
And Chicago was extremely hospitable to him. The Tribune loved him. He formed a really, really important friendship early on in Chicago with Dr. Julius Hess,
who was another remarkable physician. You obviously, Don Raffel, probably knew very little about Julius Hess. I knew very little about Julius Hess until I came upon your book. He's one of the great heroes of modern medicine, to my mind.
He absolutely was, and it was really the friendship of these two men that turned the tide for American neonatology.
Yeah.
They were like the odd couple.
Yeah, no kidding.
Julius Hess really had all the credentials.
Yeah, yeah. We have to take a little break, Don Raffel. We're continuing on. And Don's got a couple of fascinating and interesting events coming up in the next couple of weeks, and I want to mention those, too. But I also have to tell you, you have to get this book, The Strange Case of Dr. Couney, that's C-O-U-N-E-Y, How a Mysterious European Showman Saved Thousands of American Babies. It is one of the most compelling stories I have read in as long as I can remember. And the Tribune, Chicago Tribune, and Chicago itself played major parts in the life of this strange guy and in the life of premature babies, too. We'll take a little break and come back. Dawn, stay on the line, if you would. I will tell you to listen to the Steve Cochran Show on Monday at 9:10 for a new hook from the swing king on golf that might just get Justin out to play. Wow, sounds fascinating. That, once again, is the music of Switchback. They will be at Fitzgerald's on Friday. Dawn Raffel will be in Chicago, which is pretty much her stomping ground. She had grandparents were here. This is where she really came upon the story that forms the spine of this compelling The Strange Case of Dr. Couney, How a Mysterious European Showman Saved Thousands of American Babies. It is a one-of-a-kind story because you know nothing about this, and you will know everything about it after you read it. She'll be at the Seminary Co-op in Hyde Park on September 5th with Stuart Dybeck. How do you know Stuart? Are you just because Stuart, the world's great, I think the world's greatest short story writer. That's quite a pair, Dawn.
I am so honored to be doing an event with Stuart Dybeck. He is one of my literary heroes of all time. He's a great, great writer.
Me too. And he's also
to be doing an event.
Yeah, the great thing. And he's also one of the nicest human beings in the world. Then on September 6th, you will be with the lovely and smart Donna Seaman at the Harold Washington Library. The amazing thing about this book is that Couney sort of stopped doing the exhibitions in about 1940 and then died in 1950. But a number of the babies whose life he saved are still around, aren't they? That's the
yes, they are. Yes.
And you know them. And you met them.
Yes, I have. Two of them are going to be with us at the Harold Washington Library. There's a pair of twins who were in Martin Couney's incubator in 1934, and they will be joining us.
That must be, it must have been on some level, Dawn, surreal to meet some of the babies now grown and now some aged that this strange guy saved. Was it sort of surreal for you? Because you're doing all the, you know, you're doing all the research, and then it wasn't as if Cooney could walk back into your living room and say hello. But by extension, you met people whose lives he had touched.
Yes, I did. The oldest one I met was 95 years old. When she was born, the doctor who delivered her said she had no chance of living one day. And, you know, here she was, 95 years old. And she told me about going back and meeting him in New York at the New York World's Fair when she was 19 years old. So, yeah, there are a bunch of them still alive. I brought them together for a little reunion because right. Every single one said to me, have you ever met another one? If there's anyone listening who was in those incubators or had a parent in those incubators, I would love to hear from you.
What has been, I have to believe that I am not the sole enthusiast cheerleader for this book. I mean, you've been getting fantastic reviews. Generally, people must adore this story, yes?
I hope so. Yeah, I have been hearing from people who whose parents were in those incubators too, which is that's been really fun. Wow. You know, I heard from one person who said, "Oh, you know, my mother used to say she was born weighing 2 pounds and she was in a sideshow and no one would believe her."
And now she has the proof. Now she has the proof. You know, one of the reasons they were in the sideshows were the medical community, until Dr. Hess came into the picture, didn't want to put their arms around this. I think that's a little short-sighted of them. Did you?
Well, it was, you know, there was another doctor in Chicago even before Hess who tried. Chicago was a place where people did honestly try.
Yeah.
But you had, there was also obstetrics and pediatrics, and there was a gap in between.
Yeah.
And preemies fell into that gap and died.
Ugh. It just, there are tragedies in this book, but I think, you know, the last chapter, your epilogue, where you get together with some of these people and you admit that you were a really lousy driver too, Dawn. I think that's a very honest. Yes, I think that's a very honest thing. The depth of research here is pretty amazing to me too. You can be now I have to go back and read your other books, but this, you must be awfully proud. You and your family, I think you have 2 kids, must have been, this is the kind of story that in research and in the writing would really dominate one's life.
Yes, I'm grateful to them for putting up with this, because it really is like, do you mind if I allow this ghost to move in with us for 4 years and kind of make himself at home?
Yeah. And Cooney, who did make considerable money as a showman, showing off, but also helping these premature babies, he died broke, didn't he?
He did. That was very sad. He lost everything at the New York World's Fair in 39 and 40. That was supposed to be his last hurrah, and unfortunately, he invested all his own money, which I guess you should never do, and it wiped him out.
It is a remarkable story, compellingly told. You might look for a story in the Tribune maybe this Sunday, because I didn't read the book until a couple days ago, and just think it's a... it's worthy of space in the Tribune, especially because the Tribune wound up being, you know, one of the great cheerleaders for this guy. And again, Dawn, the way I began this interview, I think of this guy as one of the most odd heroes I have ever encountered. I don't know if he's a reluctant hero. I don't know if he's an accidental hero, but I think he's a hero. You do too, don't you?
I do, too. Absolutely. I would like to see him get credit for what he did.
Yeah. I think, well, you've gone about as far as one can go to make the case. I mean, you really do. Your writing is also just just terrific. And I don't say that about all Medill school grads, my brother being one. I don't say it about them all. I'm saying it about you. Don, it's a pleasure to meet you on the phone. We will talk again. And I look forward to you coming to Chicago, too. You can get information. Don has, of course, a website, dawnraffel.com. It will explain her appearance on September 5th at the Seminary Co-op Bookstore, a great bookstore in Hyde Park, with Stuart Dybeck, the greatest living short story writer in the world. And then the bright and personable and very appealing Donna Seaman at the Harold Washington Library, along with these twins who were preemies and whose lives were saved by Dr. Cooney. Dawn, a pleasure to meet you on the phone. We will talk.
Likewise. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure.